One of my hopes, I mentioned, I think it was a few Wednesdays ago, when it came to the fruit of the Spirit, I mentioned with patience. Patience is the worst of the fruit of the Spirit for me, the one I need the most work on. But then I get to another fruit of the Spirit, I'm like, no, maybe this one's the worst. I'm running into some ties here. So when it comes to gentleness is one of those areas I need a lot of work on as well. And a few weeks ago on Wednesday, I mentioned Lori's grandpa as being one of those people that when I think of gentleness, one of the first people that I think of is her grandpa. And when he passed away, I don't know, 7-8 years ago, has it been that long already? Somewhere around there. 7 years ago. When he passed away, one of the first prayers I started praying around that time was, God, give me his gentleness. He doesn't need it anymore. He's in heaven. It's easy to be gentle up there. If you could just send down his gentleness, that would be great. I had in my mind the vision of Elijah leaving his cloak for Elisha. Like, I don't need this anymore. Here, you take it. I wanted that with his gentleness, but apparently there are some shipping delays because I still haven't quite received it. I'm still waiting. I don't have one of those little numbers to check it out, but I'm hoping at some point the gentleness of Lori's grandpa is going to arrive. So even though I'm not the most qualified to talk about gentleness, here we go. I'm going to read in chapter 21. I'm going to read verses 1 through 5. Matthew 21. As they approached Jerusalem and came to Bethphage on the Mount of Olives, Jesus sent two disciples, saying to them, "Go to the village ahead of you, and at once you will find a donkey tied there with her colt by her. Untie them and bring them to me. If anyone says anything to you, tell them that the Lord needs them, and he will send them right away." This took place to fulfill what was spoken through the prophet. "Say to the daughter of Zion, see, your king comes to you, gentle and riding on a donkey, on a colt, the foal of a donkey." And now go ahead and turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 4. I'm going to read a second passage this morning as we get started. 2 Corinthians chapter 4. And as you make your way there, I just want to make a few comments about what we just read in Matthew. One of the things I want to highlight from that passage is the fact that we have this image of King Jesus, gentle and riding on a donkey. It's an image that's the furthest thing from what our world now and that world then would consider a victorious image. Nobody has ever ridden into battle on a donkey as their mighty steed. Nobody has ever ridden in the Kentucky Derby riding on the back of a donkey. Last weekend, I spent time with Lori's family. One of their favorite things to do is to always get together and watch the Kentucky Derby together. And as we're watching that and thinking ahead to this week, I tried to imagine what kind of a spectacle it would be for all these people to gather together, get their nice outfits, their big fancy hats, the fancy drinks, all to watch a bunch of donkeys making their way around this 2.5 mile track. Or how far is it around there? But they call it the fastest or the greatest 2 minutes in sports. Which, if you ran it with donkeys, it would be the most grueling 30 minutes, hour, however long it took to get donkeys to make it all the way around. Thoroughbreds are powerful, fast, and majestic to look at as they run, but donkeys, not so much. And so here we have in this passage of Matthew, we have Jesus gentle and riding into town in a way that does not resemble any earthly path to greatness. And the path that Jesus travels is the path that got him persecuted, mocked, beaten, and crucified. And it's a path that Jesus calls his followers to travel as well. So here we go. I'm going to read in 2 Corinthians chapter 4. And this is something that this is a calling for his followers, things that his followers are going to experience. 2 Corinthians chapter 4, beginning in verse 7. "But we have this treasure in jars of clay to show that this all-surpassing power is from God and not from us. We are hard-pressed on every side, but not crushed. Perplexed, but not in despair. Persecuted, but not abandoned. Struck down, but not destroyed. We always carry around in our body the death of Jesus, so that the life of Jesus may also be revealed in our body. For we who are alive are always being given over to death for Jesus' sake, so that his life may be revealed in our mortal body. So then, death is at work in us, but life is at work in you." The word of the Lord this morning. Please have a seat. As we get started talking about gentleness this morning, I first want to look at the ways in which our world generally looks at something like gentleness. More often than not, gentleness is looked at as something that's a vulnerability or a liability. Those who are gentle are sensitive, soft. If you have ever been to a county fair where they have that large hammer that you're able to swing and make the little bell go off, but if the thing reaches the top, or sometimes they have those little gauges that measure just how strong you've hit the bottom of that platform sort of thing. If you've ever been to them, if you were to put gentleness on that scale, gentleness would be something that would measure towards the bottom, and strength and power would be towards the top. There are people who might even attribute certain characteristics like gentleness to a certain gender. It seems to me that our world might suggest that gentleness is more of a feminine characteristic than a masculine one. And right now, probably there are pastors and churches that are talking about or suggesting or highlighting the fact that tenderness and gentleness is a characteristic of motherhood, as if it's something unique to women and not to men. While I do understand the temptation to do that and to talk about that, I do have some problems with that when it comes to the fruit of the Spirit that we've been working our way through. When it comes to the fruit of the Spirit mentioned in Galatians, there's nothing contextually that would lead me to believe that there are some fruit of the Spirit that are for guys and some fruit of the Spirit that are for women. The fruit of gentleness is a fruit that is to be evident in the lives of all the followers of Christ, men and women. While gentleness and meekness are different words in our language, each with different connotations to them, in the Greek language in the New Testament, they are the same word. They have the same root, and it's always complicated for translators to try and figure out what word to best use in our language to communicate what is going on in Scripture. When it comes to gentleness, we may think of other words like tenderness and caring. When it comes to meekness, we may think of someone who is extremely submissive. Depending on the scripture context, the translators have to decide, are we going to use the word meekness or gentleness? But really, they are the same word trying to convey different meanings. This world equates meekness with weakness. Both gentleness and meekness contain within themselves an element of submission, and we live in a world where the submissive are viewed as weak. A world where meekness equals weakness. This world is filled with people who would rather subdue others than submit to others. There are winners, there are losers, there are conquerors, and there are the conquered. And gentleness and meekness are a couple ingredients that some would consider in this world to be ingredients for becoming one of the conquered people in this world. In a world that has a survival of the fittest mentality, it can be a challenge for the gentle and the meek to survive, much less thrive. When it comes to the ladders of occupational success, the higher the ladder, the more cutthroat people become. Those with a tender heart for the well-being of others can easily be pushed to the side as the brash and the bold claw their way or bulldoze their way to the top, leaving all sorts of casualties in their wake. Bullies exist in the workplace every bit as much as they exist in schools. Bully behavior does not have an age limit, nor is it limited to harsh words or violent actions. Bullies insist on doing things their own way, and they are persistent in getting their own way. Bullies hold firm until everyone else submits. And sometimes all it takes to be a bully is to be persistent. Keep insisting on their way until everybody else submits and gives in to their way or their idea or their agenda. And because the forceful advance and the submissive do not, it's easy to see why this world would consider gentleness and meekness as a weakness when it comes to worldly versions of success. The voices of the gentle and the meek get drowned out by those who insist on yelling, quiet people in a loud world. There are different temptations that happen when it comes to being a gentle or a meek person in this world. Since it's Mother's Day, I do want to mention babies for just a little bit. Have you ever noticed that newborn babies have that new car smell? I'm sure that many of you, if not all of you, have seen the strange phenomenon when a newborn baby makes its arrival, its first appearance at the home or even at a church. When a new baby arrives, when somebody takes that baby, the first thing they do is they just give it a good smell and just kind of take in that new baby smell. They lean in, and that's what they want to do. They want to feel that smell, that fresh new baby. Nobody wants to be there when it's a diaper change, but when it's to smell the head of a newborn baby, they're ready for it. It's exactly like when you get into a brand new car and there's that freshness and newness to it. How long does that new baby or new car smell last? Not long enough. There is something special about a new baby or a new car right out of the belly or right out of off the production floor that unfortunately goes away at one point or another. The car I just got is only a few years old, but it definitely doesn't have the new car smell. In fact, there was an issue in the very beginning where I was trying to figure out what it was. It was like, was there too much deodorizer in this car before? It wasn't owned by a smoker, but I did find out, as it made sense, the person who owned it before vaped. And so they used a little, you know, the big puff of vape smoke, which is, has its own little smell to it. So finally, that smell has gone away quite a bit. So, but initially, I'm like, I don't know about that. So it definitely wasn't a new car smell, that's for sure. Along with the new baby smell, there's also a softness and a smoothness to a baby's skin, which is why we have sayings like, smooth as a baby's bottom, or behind, whatever. But, I don't know what word you choose. The way I always heard it was smooth as a baby's bottom, especially after a guy shaved. They always said that, smooth as a baby's bottom. That softness, too, goes away in the same way that a brand new car will eventually lose its shine. The more that I do dishes and the more that I do garden work, the less and less like a baby's bottom my hands get. I start getting calluses and dirty little areas that are just you can scrub all day and it's just going to still look like the dirt from the yard. So these are far from soft and delicate hands anymore. The changes that happen as a newborn grows and develops is not limited to the exterior things like the smell or the softness of their skin. Life has a way of hardening people on the inside, and in many ways, it is something that is encouraged. Forming thick skin is deemed a necessity for dealing with a harsh world. And over time, the world can do a number on people. I've mentioned at different times, I don't know if I've mentioned it on a Sunday morning, it might be more of a Wednesday night thing, but I've mentioned my coworker Dave on different occasions. Dave worked nights at the Resolve Center years and years before I got started. And when I first started working with him, it was quite a challenge. We worked together for about 6 years before he passed away. Dave was not a gentle guy when I started working with him. He was set in his ways, he was rigid, he was forceful, he was bitter, he was easily angered, he was swearing all the time. He was just not a pleasant person to be around. He was the furthest thing from a gentle person that I had ever encountered. It took a few months, but eventually I heard his story. Bit by bit, little by little, from Vietnam to stomach ulcers to the removal of his stomach altogether to a battle with cancer to numerous marriages to another battle with cancer. All of a sudden, the bitterness and the lack of gentleness in his behavior, the reason behind that was apparent. Dave wasn't always like that. Dave wasn't the way I found him when I started working at the hospital. The longer people live in this world, the bigger the temptation to trade in qualities like gentleness and meekness for qualities that appear to be far more durable and far more useful for surviving and thriving in this world. Qualities that can stand up better to the kind of forces at work in this world because gentleness and meekness don't seem to be strong enough to combat those forces. The weapons of this world are always a tempting alternative for people who are called to be citizens of another kingdom that does not fight using the weapons of this world. Gentleness got Jesus killed. So why would anyone choose that? Jesus rode into what he encountered in Jerusalem leading up to his death and resurrection, gentle and riding on a donkey. We are to be in this world, but not of this world. And one of the ways that we stand out in this world is through the fruit of gentleness. The temptation for gentle and meek people is this: if you can't beat them, join them. You've all heard that saying before, I'm sure. And there comes a point where it seems like gentleness and meekness isn't working or isn't worth it. Gentleness has an aroma. Maybe it's just me, but it seems like those who exhibit a pure form of gentleness are looked at as extremely odd, as if they're an alien from another planet. And at the same time, there's an appealing quality. There's an appealing quality about them as well. The person that comes to mind for me, aside from people that I actually know, I mentioned Lori's grandpa already, but one of the first people that I knew before her grandpa, one of the people that embodied gentleness for me was Mr. Rogers from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. For me, he was, like I said, the embodiment of gentleness. He had an otherworldly quality about him. He came across like somebody who never lost the smoothness of a baby's bottom or lost that newborn baby's smell. Like someone who had resisted every temptation to become hardened or harsh or bitter, He maintained a superior level of gentleness in a difficult and ever-changing world. In fact, when it comes to many of the fruit of the Spirit, a lot of times I think back to him. He embodied goodness. He embodied patience. And like I said, he embodied gentleness. Gentleness has an aroma in this world that stands out. Just a few weeks ago when we celebrated Easter, there were many of you that got flowers that we had lined up along here. Some of you may even got more than one flower. We took home a couple, and then my mom got one as well. And so I'm sure a lot of you had the same experience that Lori and I had. You took the flowers home, you put them in a special place, maybe on a kitchen table or somewhere in the kitchen or maybe in the living room, and that room began to fill up with the fragrance of the flowers that you happened to get. And probably the same was with Lori and I. I'm sure many of you don't have those same flowers anymore. Eventually, they start to die off and the petals start to fall off. And so what happens with that is then all of a sudden the fragrance starts to fade as well. And so it's time to throw out the plant. So you scoop up all the petals and you get it out and you take it out in the garbage and that's it. But here's the thing. Those petals, even though they've fallen off, are filled with a fragrance. The fragrance on the outside actually pales in comparison to the potency of the fragrance when it's just the plant. If you were to collect those petals into a dish and use something to smash and grind those petals, you would be overwhelmed by the most amazing fragrance. A living flower has a fragrance that is only exceeded by the fragrance that comes about when it's hard-pressed and crushed. Gentleness has an aroma, and that aroma is magnified in times of hardship. Ephesians chapter 5, verses 1 through 2 reads this, "Be imitators of God, therefore, as dearly loved children, and live a life of love, just as Christ loved us and gave himself up for us as a fragrant offering and sacrifice to God." The offering up and the sacrificing of Jesus unleashed a unique fragrance that this world has never smelled before. The beating and bruising of King Jesus, the gentle one on a donkey, had an aroma about him that grew stronger in the face of resistance. The greater the contrast between the brutality and his response to that brutality, the stronger the aroma of Christ stood out. And then you have what we read in the very beginning this morning from 2 Corinthians chapter 4. Inside these earthen vessels, we are to carry around with us the death of Jesus. The death of Jesus was a fragrant offering, and we are to have that within us at all times. We are to keep it within us at all times so that when we are hard-pressed on every side, when we are perplexed, when we are persecuted, the thing that oozes out of us is not anger or bitterness or indignation, but the aroma of Christ, who willingly submitted to the worst that this world could throw at him. And here is the promise that we have from Jesus to the gentle, to the meek. The meek shall inherit the earth. To the meek who are living in a world that views meekness as weakness, to the meek living in a world that has a habit of pressing in on and persecuting the gentle, to the meek, Jesus says, you are blessed. You will inherit the world. When all is said and done, the forces that opposed you will not crush you. The tough questions of this world that perplexed you will not lead you to give up hope. And despite the persecution, you're never, ever alone. The gentle are the ones who will endure on into eternity. The new heaven and the new earth will be inherited by those who faithfully submit and not those who forcefully subdue. The gentle and the meek know how to submit and serve the people of this world, and because of that, the gentle and the meek will inherit the world that they have already been taking care of. Meanwhile, the power-hungry and the domineering and the forceful people who are bulldozing over everyone else and everything in their paths will find themselves left out. They have scratched and clawed their way to the top of the ladder only to find themselves encountering a kingdom that has flipped the script on them, a kingdom that runs counter to the ways of this world, a kingdom where the last become first, a kingdom where the gentle instead of the forceful reign and rule. This morning, we had the opportunity once again to take communion together as a family, as a part of the body of Christ. And Joe's going to come and we're going to be singing a song first. And as we sing that song this morning, the song is God's finishing the work that he started in there. There's another song that runs in my head too. So as we sing this morning, one of the things I want you to consider is, what has the world done to you in the, however many years you've been here? Are you getting more gentle or less gentle as you go? Because like I said, the world has a way of wearing down where it's easy to get rid of the gentleness and meekness and take on characteristics of this world. But we are called to take on the gentleness of Christ. So go ahead and stand this morning. We're going to go ahead and sing, and then I'll do an invitation for communion after that.